it's progressing, you know, colds have sort of...
I don't see it. It's just more important.
Good afternoon, everybody. Today is April 9th at 3:08 in the afternoon, and this is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. I will go ahead and call the meeting to order. Not everyone is here, but it's that time of year where people are spread thin and trying to appear in two or three places at once, so I'm sure we're going to see some familiar faces arriving in the next few minutes. But because we've got a lot of ground to cover, I thought I'd go ahead and get us started and we can get the record established and on its way. Mr. Burka, welcome back. Anything to share with us before I begin the public hearing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee. If you like to follow along with the materials in OLIS, they're the ones that we posted right at the beginning of the agency's presentation on the March 23rd date. There is some additional materials posted to today's meeting date having to do with the road user charge program and Connect Oregon, just as background materials for you.
Excellent. All right. Thank you. Well, that being said, I will convene the public hearing on House Bill, to reconvene the public hearing on House Bill 5040. In any event, we're going to have that hearing. And Mr. Garrett, I'd like to invite you and your colleagues to come up and join us.
Very good.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Matthew Garrett. I'm the director of Oregon's Department of Transportation. Our objective today is threefold. We are to place before you information specific to the highway portfolio, to our central service portfolio, and then we'll jump into a conversation specific to Connect Oregon. So again, our mission is to get through those, clear that airspace, and then ready for a conversation that plays itself out next week as well as we move to our DMV and passenger rail discussions and anything else that may populate those conversations. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to Paul Mather, the Highway Division Administrator, to jump into that portfolio.
Welcome, Mr. Mather.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator for ODOT. Going to walk you through the Highway Division today's portfolio. The Highway Division is really broken out into two major components. We have the maintenance and operation piece of our business and then the construction piece. Our maintenance folks, or our maintenance activities, are really the day-to-day operational activities that we do just to keep the highways open, keep them safe, and keep them operating. Our maintenance staffs typically don't do construction projects or typically maintenance activities to meet those objectives. There are things like filling potholes, plowing snow, removing brush, those type of activities. Our maintenance folks are also the ones that are called upon during major events, whether it's floods or snowstorms. They're oftentimes the heroes that we see out there when we're telling folks to stay home because the roads are too dangerous. They're the ones going to work to open the roadways. The operations component of our maintenance and operation portfolio is really focused on safety and efficiencies of the system. Our operation budget covers things such as our operational centers. These are dispatch centers that dispatch in partnership with state police to dispatch to issues out on the roadway, whether it's rocks in the road or accidents. It also funds our dedicated incident response staff. These are those staff that are dedicated to respond to those such incidences. And other services such as our tripcheck.com that people use and continue to use, especially during those major events. Our construction portfolio is really centered around our STIP, or our State Transportation Improvement Program. It's our capital program that we use to fund our major projects. We have it divided up into two major program areas. One we call our Fix-It program area, and the other is Enhance. In our Fix-It program area, we do just that. We keep the system in as best shape as we can. It's rehabilitating bridges, pavements, and those sort of projects just to preserve the investment that we have. The projects are selected based on our management systems that we have and really guide us in making the best investments with the limited resources we have to where are the best investments, whether it's a bridge painting project or a deck overlay or a pavement overlay type project. Our enhanced program is really a selection process is really based at a grassroots level. Area commissions on transportation are a very key part of that. They use direction from our Oregon Transportation Plan, direction from statute and other criteria set by our commission to guide them in their recommendations to the commissions on projects that they select to enhance or to expand the system. Again, our area commissions are key for us. They're one of the tools that are just one of the engagements that we have with community is extremely valuable for us and for our commission in guiding our selection and our policy development within the department. Once we have our project selected, we move into the engineering phase. This is the phase where we take those concepts and turn them into a bid package that we're able to go out to bid with. This work typically is done 30 and sometimes 40% outsourced through private consulting firms to do this work, or we'll do this work in-house. But again, the objective is to come up with a bid document for us to go out to bid. During this phase, we also have extensive engagement with the public as we work through different alternatives of the project, how we're going to construct the project, engaging local businesses, and ensuring that we've accounted for their needs and particular issues with the projects that we have underway. Once we have a successful bid, we have a private contractor on board to do the work, we move into the construction engineering phase of our work, and we have our local project manager's offices that administer those projects and ensure that the design specification contracts are implemented and documented in the proper way, as well as keeping our work zones safe. Work zone safety has been something that we've focused on recently, we actually continue to focus on as we deal with increased traffic volumes and working through our work zones on a daily basis during the peak travel times of the construction season.
So, Mr. Mather, I'm going to give you a chance to catch your breath there, and I
Good.
Have a question, and if you didn't get this question in advance, I'm happy for you to come back later and provide me with a little information. But, you know, so many of the things that we do here, my constituents, my neighbors back home don't understand, but there's some things that they don't understand better than other things that they don't understand.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they don't understand really well has to do with highway improvements, and I'm not sure whether it's the fix-it or the enhance, but I have a project going on about a half mile from my house called the Niatsu project, where we're building a left-hand turn lane on Highway 101. And the report coming back to us that left-hand turn lane is going to cost about $4 million. And so my neighbors say to me, how is turn lane, widening the road, putting some pavement down, doing the excavation, the studies, and the construction going to cost $4 million? I asked that question, and the response I got back from your good people indicated that the survey and engineering was going to cost about $500,000. The right-of-way costs are going to be about $750,000. They talked about $500,000 expense to remove possibly contaminated material and haul that away. But people are still scratching their head at these numbers. And I just wanted to invite you to help the committee understand how these numbers seem to escalate more quickly. Buying the right-of-way seems more expensive than buying the house. The engineering costs and the study costs are going to cost $500,000. Help us understand how those numbers add up, because we've got to explain it to folks back home.
Mr. Chair, that's a good question, and actually a question we continue to scratch our heads over, too, because we look at that project and see the $4 million price tag and wonder why is it cost so much. Just a little background for the committee on the project. It's a project, a safety project. We had 27 accidents during a five-year period. When we get feedback from local citizens, as you know, Mr. Chair, it's a safety need that needs to be addressed. So we prioritized that through the process I just described. When we got the original scoping of the project back, we actually came back at $5 million to do the project. And this is, as you described, a small project, but it's really got big project issues with it. And I'll just describe some of those kind of big-time or big project issues that it has. The first you mentioned was the contaminated soil that's underneath the roadway. We need to treat that as hazardous material. And one of the first things we did was try to redesign the project in a way to minimize the amount of hazardous material we had to haul off and dispose of in a proper manner. We were successful in making great strides in that, but there's still some that we have to excavate and haul off in that manner. It's also a section of 101, Mr. Chair, as you know, it has high traffic volumes. and something that we have to account for during construction. Our strategy looked to widen the shoulders, so we had a long-term benefit, but also a short-term way to deal with traffic on a daily basis. During our look at this, we actually went back and looked at flagging. Does it make sense to cut costs, and maybe we can get by with flagging in this situation? It really didn't pencil out from a dollar and cent standpoint, or from a community standpoint. We were going to make traffic. It's going to be bad, but unbearably bad, if we weren't able to accommodate that. The other thing we did was other design things to minimize impacts to wetlands. We have a golf course on the north side of the project that's owned by the tribe that's designated 4F parks property that we have to work through and do mitigations for. We looked at the median on the project. There's a left turn lane that's part of the project. We actually narrowed that up to kind of minimal standards to minimize costs. We look to combine this project with other projects from an economy of scale standpoint. Does it make sense to incorporate this into a larger project and maybe achieve some efficiencies that way? There really isn't anything in this area during the foreseeable future, and delaying the project more than a couple years didn't really make sense to us either. But I guess, Mr. Chair, we take those questions about cost by you and citizens very seriously. And we look through the process I just described at way of minimizing costs, and we'll continue to, as we finished the final design on the project, we'll continue to look for ways to reduce project cost. But again, this is a project that's a small project, but it's got kind of big time issues that go with it. And it really illustrates some of the challenges that we have on all our projects. It just, in this case, those challenges are all wrapped up in a small project, which brings a pretty big price tag with it.
All right. Well, I appreciate that explanation. I also thank the committee for indulging me in asking questions about something specific that's close to home, but I think it kind of illuminates the nature of how these budgets suddenly seem to expand very quickly. All right. Please continue.
Good. Let me just talk about some of the kind of the major budget drivers that we have. We're dealing with a system that is aging and deteriorating, whether it's our bridges, whether it's our pavements. The funds that we have to keep the system in good working order are not enough to keep up with the deterioration. If you turn in your packet under the highway piece on page 6 of my presentation, you'll see some graphs on the bridge conditions and the pavement conditions. These are graphs that we've used in a number of presentations, but really show the deterioration of both our bridges and our pavements. On the bridge side, we've seen a short-term increase in our bridge condition as a result of the investment in the OTO3 bridge program. But long-term, we have aging bridges from the 40s, 50s, and 60s that are going to catch up to us over time. On the pavement side, as we see our funding deteriorate, the pavement conditions will likewise deteriorate moving forward. Another major budget driver for us is our continuing to understand the full impacts of a major earthquake off the Oregon coast. We just completed the Seismic Plus report that looks at not only the bridge conditions that I described, but also where we can interject to that strategic investment into improving the seismic, the vulnerable bridges that we have in the state and make some retrofits to those bridges to ensure that Oregon's economy and lifeline routes are working after this major earthquake. Another area I'd like to highlight is just the success we've had over the last 10 years in that OTO3 bridge program that I mentioned. It's a $1.3 billion program. We see big capital construction projects in Oregon, oftentimes over budget and over time. This is an example of a project that came in on time and under budget, and something that we're very proud of, and things that we learned many lessons from that we're able to apply to our everyday highway projects. Also highlight in the Jobs and Transportation Act that was passed in 09, we're well on our way to moving those projects forward. In fact, we have 29 of those projects that are open to traffic. On page 7 of the presentation, you'll see what we call our mountain graph, and you're able to see at kind of the foundation of that, the bottom portion of that graph is how dependent we are on federal funds to maintain the system, whether it's bridge projects or pavement projects. That's where we get the funding for those type of projects. And you see over time, you see a slow deterioration of those federal funds in real dollars, but a pretty dramatic reduction as you apply inflation to that. You also see in that graph the investments that the Oregon legislature has made in transportation during the last decade, whether it's the OTO 1, 2, 3, or the Jobs and Transportation Act, the various Connect Oregon grants have been major investments. But as we look forward, we see we're on the downside of that mountain graph, and there's things that we need to do to make sure at the department we have a sustainable program going forward. During the last couple of years, we've embarked on a series of self-imposed exercises to reduce 130 positions in the department. We've eliminated about 250 pieces of equipment and closed several facilities just to match and align our revenues with our expenditures going forward. You'll see also in your packet a long list of partnerships that we have with cities and counties. This is something that we've done for some time, but in these times of difficult fundings, both for the cities, the counties, and for us, it's motivated all three of us to come to the table and look for those opportunities to share equipment, share workforces, and find efficiencies between our programs. I wanted to highlight just a couple of kind of looking forward, some of the technology advancements that we see coming in highway construction, and some of those innovations that maybe not be too far in the future or actually are here today. The first I wanted to talk about is our 3D design. This is really a new technology where we actually take the design packet that a designer has in the computer or their computer-aided drafting machine, take that digital design and take that design to the contractor, and they're able to plug it directly into the highway construction machinery, whether it's a bulldozer, whether it's a grader. The operator is able to see that design right on the display screen in front of them and able to build the roadway off of that. There's no surveying that's involved, and they're able to use GPS, LIDAR, other technologies to actually build that roadway. The equipment is able to operate at its maximum efficiency. We're able to eliminate the surveying step in our construction process. We're estimating, our national estimates are anywhere from 4 to 6% savings overall in our construction program. And from a safety standpoint, we don't have people out there trying to survey around heavy construction equipment or traffic. It's a great advancement for us. If you look at the project just north of here on I-5 in Woodburn, it's really reaped the benefits from that. That project is being built by K&E contractors out of Salem. They've really invested heavily into this technology, and has allowed them to have that project over a year ahead of schedule as a result of the technology. The other technology you're going to see in construction is a paperless construction, or we call e-construction. I know here at the legislature we've moved to eliminate paper as part of the process. We're doing the same thing in construction and having our inspectors out there uploading information in real time, making decisions in real time using that technology and not antiquated ways of paper, and able to show some efficiency. So that's something on the horizon that you're going to see us using more and more. Let me touch on just a few of our performance measures that we have. The first one I want to touch on is pavements. I know I mentioned this earlier. I just want to highlight this one, since this is a major budget driver for us in our pavement conditions. We spend about $100 million a year preserving the pavements. For us to keep our pavement conditions at the conditions they're at today, we should be spending about $200 million. We should be touching a piece of pavement about every 10 to 20 years, either doing a chip seal, doing some kind of overlay, some kind of pavement preservation treatment to that roadway every 10 to 20 years. Today, we're on the average of about every 40 years we touch a piece of pavement. And again, as you saw in the graphs earlier, that's going to catch up to us in our pavement conditions going forward. The other graph that I wanted to touch on was our completion on time. This is an area that we struggle with.
Excuse me, Mr. Mather. I just want to back up a little bit. I mean, you touched on deferred maintenance. You said that that we, and I'm sorry, repeat those figures for me. We're spending about $100 million. We should be spending $200 million. Is that what you said?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We spend about $100 million annually today in our pavements. And for us to keep the current conditions of our pavements that we see today, we should be spending about $200 million.
So what does that mean 5 years from now?
Well, you can see in the graph, we're going to see our pavements deteriorate. And how that's going to look is, we're not going to treat every pavement the same. We're going to start with the interstate being the highest priority. And from a safety standpoint, the speeds and the truck volumes, we're going to preserve that pavement at a higher level. And then we're going to move down to our statewide highways, whether it's 101, Highway 30. And then we're going to go to what we call our district highways, whether it's the Celeste Highway, some of the more minor highways. Those are really the ones that are going to kind of take it in the shorts, are those lesser highways for us. Part of the conversation we've had in the Transportation Committee is about orphan highways. And that's really where the term comes from those lesser state highways that become prioritized down for us. But from a local community standpoint, sometimes those are more important routes than some of their county routes. And so there becomes kind of a disconnect between the condition of those highways and the importance of committees.
Representative Whitson.
Is the $100 million every year or biennial?
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodsett, that's actually an annual number, that $100 million annually.
So $200 million for 2 years, then, is what you're saying?
That's what we spend today.
Okay, and that's on your total that you spend on pavement, excuse me, fixing pavement around the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodsett, that's correct. That's on the interstate, that's on our secondary highway. That's the total amount of money, whether we're doing chip seals, whether we're doing overlays, whether we're doing total reconstruction projects. That $100 million is an annual number.
Okay, and if I may, what is ODOT's total budget then for the biennium?
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodsett, the total. $3.5 billion is total for.
And why don't you do the highway budget?
Yeah, for the highway budget, we're nearly $3.5 billion.
Okay, so just follow up. So I just want to understand, we're spending $200 million of a $3.5 billion budget repairing our roads. Just want to make sure. Okay, great. Thank you.
And I just want, I'm sorry, Mr. Garrett, you.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, and Representative Woodson, I think the bottom line, again, we have a $3.5 billion agency budget,
mm-hmm.
$2.5 billion highway budget,
mm-hmm.
but that breaks itself out into different programs. Mr. Mather is speaking about the preservation program, so yeah. On a biennial basis, $200 million on pavements. But we also have investment in general maintenance, bridges, operations. So parses it. You can break down that 2.5 in the various programs within the highway portfolio.
I'm just looking for pavement. That's what we're talking about.
Correct.
Actually,
$200 million
on the road on is $200 million every 2 years. Okay, yep. Great. Thank you.
Yep.
And Mr. Mather, I just wanted to make sure I understood orphan highways. Are those the highways that we don't give enough attention or the highways we give no attention at all to?
Well, Mr. Chair, it probably depends on who you're talking to. Some of the communities would say that we don't give any attention to. I would say we do give some attention to, but clearly when we look at our priorities and we have to make tough decisions to prioritize where our dollars are, in general, we prioritize the interstate as the highest priority. We have a statewide freight routes that we have, and then we have what we call district highways or regional highways that are less. And some of those get to a point where the term that's been used are orphan highways.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. Please continue.
Just the last thing I wanted to touch on was the last performance measure around construction budgets. It really shows the attention that we pay to the overall budgets of projects. If you roll together during the last 13 years, all the projects that have gone through construction through ODOT, whether it's the OTIA 3 bridge program, whether it's our normal program, and you take the entire budgets of all those projects, the ones that are over budget, the ones that are under budget, for 13 years, we are 0.1% under budget when you add all those projects together. And again, I think the kind of the crown jewel, the highlight of that is our OTIA 3 bridge program, which we delivered on time and under budget. So that concludes my presentation.
Very good. Any questions? Yes, Representative Nierman.
Hi. So I want to thank you, first of all, for the tour that I got of the Eddyville bypass there. And I appreciate your expertise on that. And it was nice to view that and to actually see how the actual gravel on the road meets up with the contract and what happened on that there. So I appreciate that. The question I have has to do with electric cars. So one of the debates that we're having is that we have to come up with some replacement revenue or gas tax or whatever, something like that, because in part for a couple of different reasons, because cars are getting better gas mileage, and we have these electric cars that get actually infinite gas mileage because there's no gas involved in them at all. And my reading of the Oregon Constitution and the way that the funds are dedicated to the highway fund seems to me, as a non-lawyer, to say that if you have something that propels a motor vehicle and you tax it, that according to the Constitution, that tax has to go to the highway fund. So if I put natural gas into my hot water heater and it gets taxed, then that's all. Like, I can do whatever I want with that tax. But if I put natural gas or gasoline or electricity into my car, that has to go into the highway fund. Does that happen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nierman, yes, that's what happens. Maybe the director can talk a little bit more about the specifics of the electric, but your interpretation of the Constitution is correct.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ehrman, you are correct. That is money that is dedicated to the Highway Trust Fund. It is about the propulsion of the vehicle, no matter what the fuel is. So that reading is clear, and you have it exactly right.
Can I follow?
Representative,
I guess I'll just follow. What's the dollar amount, or roughly, and I don't expect you to know sharp pencil, but what's the dollar amount that you get from that?
From
the electricity taxes that go to the highway fund?
I guess, Chair Witt, Representative Nierman, it is nominal. I can get you the exact fee, but again, we don't have that. We're projecting to the future
sure.
that there'll be a growth.
Yeah.
Penetration rate's not high enough, so I think the numbers are nominal from the electric vehicle.
Good, and that's fine. You know, that's good enough. I don't need to get the exact numbers. Just okay. But, so you are collecting the tax then. Is that who oversees the estimating of that? Because I can't imagine that's an exact science. Is that the Public Utility Commission or?
I take Mr. Chairman, Representative Nierman, we actually have economists that will look into that. Again, they project out the penetration rate, the number of vehicles on the road, and what it would cost. To your earlier point, we are not collecting anything from the electric vehicles right now. That is the pilot that we have coming online July 1st of 2015. This is the road user charge, which okay. will be, there's an opportunity to charge a penny and a half per mile for the use of the transportation infrastructure.
Okay, so now, so if I could follow, please. So I think we're misunderstanding each other because, so I understand you have the pilot and you're going to put some GPS unit or some odometer unit or else allow me to just write you a check and you don't get to see where I went or anything like that. And so I understand that there's that program there. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about today, some guy has an electric car and he plugs into a Blink station out there on State Street, and I use, I don't even know how much would be a reasonable amount, maybe $19 a month worth of electricity or something like that. And when I get that $19 of electricity, there's taxes involved in that electricity there. Like, for instance, the part of it is a public purpose charge that goes to the Energy Trust of Oregon.
Sure.
According to the Constitution, if I pay that tax, then that should go to the highway fund and not to the Energy Trust of Oregon. I guess then if we're agreeing that that is a tax, right?
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nierman, I guess agreeing on if that's a tax, I'm not sure that's been defined. That certainly mm-hmm. is nothing that has come my way in terms of that definition.
Okay, so then maybe I'm biting off more than if I could follow, please. Maybe I'm biting off more than I should there. So somewhere there's a tax somewhere in the electricity bill somewhere. Currently, does that money go to the highway fund or not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nierman, I do not believe it does right now.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Well, thank you again, Mr. Mather. Mr. Garrett, are we at a transition point in your presentation today?
Yes, I apologize, Mr. Chairman.
No, that's quite all right.
What I'd like to do right now, Mr. Chairman, is bring Clyde Psyche up. Clyde is the division administrator for our central services.
Right, and while he's on the way up, I'm going to take a moment and recess this hearing to take care of a little internal business. Colleagues, when we thank you for your patience as we do a little makeup there. And is it Mr. Psyche?
Yes, that's right, Chair.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
before Mr. Psyche starts, I apologize for being late. This is one of these days where I'll run out of day before I run out of stuff to do. I don't know how much Mr. Mather covered some of the vehicle miles traveled program, and I don't want to reopen that part of the hearing, but I at least wanted to alert ODOT that I have a number of questions about that program and the status of the computer development. And are we on time? Are we on
sure.
budget? How many people have subscribed? I'm going to be getting those questions to Ms. Naburka, so you'll have them in writing. And that way I can jog my own memory.
Absolutely.
It's a voluminous amount of questions. And just also to put you on notice, I've got a pretty hefty dose of DMV questions. And you'll get those all as soon as I get them to Ms. Naburka.
Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Johnson, we appreciate that. We actually provided what I would call a primer to Ms. Naburka and the OLIS, I guess to OLIS rather than Julie, which gives you some of the basic questions you've outlined, but obviously we look forward to some of those specifics. We will dive as deep as you need to go, and Mr. McClellan will be here next week to dive into the DMV conversation, so we look forward to engaging that topic as well.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Excellent. Reverend Whitsitt.
Yes, I was wondering if Senator Johnson would share with us, or if it is proprietary. Would you consider sharing the answers, your questions?
You'll have plenty of opportunity to hear them, and the answers will come out. Mr. Chair, forgive me, I didn't have permission. The answers will come out in the phase two. This is just the tee up because we've done a very high level overview, and we're now getting the funnel narrower and narrower. And as it gets narrower. Even though there is precious little general fund in ODOT, I still think that it's within the purview of the committee to ask questions for internal expenditures, such as the computer modeling for the vehicle miles traveled and security concerns about, I don't know what those little thingies are called. That's a technical term. Mr. Mather will know. But the stuff that Flo sells on the TV that you stick in your car.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Co-Chair, they're called a dongle. And I'm going to jump right over
where
that.
Where the hell did that come from?
A dongle. But so there's no slow reveal here. Just let me tease a little bit, though. The effort.
Why does that seem
time.
Particularly appropriate with that title?
Dongle. Yeah. The road user charge effort is on time, and we will flip the switch July 1 of 2015 for that program. So we have what we think is a very positive discussion, a lot of hard work, very complicated and nuanced discussion, but we will dive into the depths you want to
thank you for increasing my vocabulary by one word.
A dongle?
A dongle.
A dongle.
Thank you.
Let's not digress any further.
Chair Gomberg, Chair Johnson, members of the committee, for the record, Clyde Psyche, Deputy for Central Services. That's really hard to follow. But I'm going to move into my presentation on the Central Services division of the department. Central Services consists of seven branches. The first, Audit Services. We perform both internal and external audits. External audits are done on contractors to ensure that they're following the federal and state laws and regulations, and also that they're billing for services in an appropriate manner. Our internal audit function is performed on department programs and primarily to identify risks and strategies to mitigate risks, and also to identify areas where we can make process improvements so we can increase efficiency and effectiveness of our programs. It's the unit that's responsible for document management. They also coordinate our policies and procedures. Mr. Chair, could I get some water? I apologize. And coordinate our public records requests. They also provide graphic design, photo video services, and reprographic services. And these services are provided to ODOT, other state agencies, including the legislature. Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Oh, no worries.
Better. Our facilities unit operates and manages and maintains our ODOT-owned buildings and facilities, and also negotiates and administers our lease space. Our financial services branch administers the bonding program as well. They are also responsible for the administration of our fuels tax program. And they also provide financial support to the department in the areas of accounting, accounts receivable and payable, payroll, and processing of travel claims. We have a full service human resources shop.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
The processing of travel claims
for employees.
Thank you. I just didn't understand you. I got it now. Thank
Senator
you.
Senator Johnson. Human resources, we have a full-service human resources shop that provides advice and support to ODOT in the areas of recruitment, classification, performance management, labor relations, collective bargaining, and succession planning. They also manage our diversity, EEO, and affirmative action programs.
Question. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see. Representative Whitson.
That's fine. Could you tell us what your budget is for the last two items that you mentioned?
Chair Gumberg, Representative Whitson, I don't have an individual branch breakdown. Our total biennial budget for the entire division is $183 million. And that's for all seven branches.
Follow-up?
Could you list the seven branches?
Sure. Audits, business services, facilities, financial services. I'm sorry.
Is this on OLIS?
Okay, yeah, it's all listed in the presentation document.
I'm having trouble getting that. Okay.
Oh, okay. Would you like me to continue?
No, that's fine.
Okay, great. We also have responsibility for information services, the technology part of the branch. We provide application development, support, and maintenance of applications. We support systems like the current DMV system. We maintain and support agency computers and desktops. We're also responsible for information security, which is a really big issue for all state agencies now. And then we also provide support for IT projects within the department. We'll be working with DMV on their service transformation project and also provide the technical support for the road user charge program that Senator Johnson was talking about earlier.
And if I could just back up for a second.
Sure.
Information security, which we agree is very important in a lot of different agencies. So you have your own centralized office that deals with this in your agency, but we also have, through DAS, a broader level of support. Help me understand the linkage between those levels of security support.
So, Chair Gumberg, we have staff internally that are responsible for security around our systems. And then they interact with the state CIO's office that has the enterprise security office. And their responsibility is primarily for the state network and statewide systems. But they also consult and help agencies with their information security protocols, procedures, and policies. We also, at times when there is a breach of a system, the state security office will call upon agencies, and typically they call upon us to provide security staff to go over and help mitigate the impacts. And we had staff that went over and worked the latest breach over at Employment Department. And so it really is kind of a community where we agencies share resources and information and really try to look at it, not just at the agency level, but from an enterprise level also.
Thank you.
The last branch is our procurement office. As Mr. Mather said, a large part of our budget goes through to vendors through contracts. So this office is responsible for developing the request for proposals, request for information. They run the solicitation process. They do the evaluations of the bids and then develop and negotiate contracts and price agreements. And they also provide training for our staff in contract administration and contract management. And so, Chair Gumberg, those are the seven branches. Be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. A couple of questions about procurement and contracting. Would it be safe to assume that within the scope of your responsibilities, you've got lists of all of the contracts that ODOT currently has negotiated?
Chair Gumberg and Chair Johnson, yes, and we are putting the list together. We've got the request from Ms. Nebruka earlier today, and we're in the process of putting it together for you right now.
Good. That request came from me.
Okay.
And I haven't just singled you guys out. I am quite interested in seeing how rich the contractor environment for state government is. This is a question that I have been posing to lots of state agencies.
Sure.
What are the contracts? Who are they with? What dollar amount? What's the duration? What are the deliverables? Was it competitively bid? And you can do that in a matrix if you want to start out with just for ease of handling. But I'm quite interested in seeing the contracts. I also am interested in knowing from you whether or not the contract documents are available for public scrutiny.
Chair Gumberg, Chair Johnson, Ms. DeBruca provided us with an example about Employment Department. The matrix they use, and so if that's acceptable, we're going to use that as a template and kind of fill in all the fields they did and provide you with a list similar to what they did. If that's not acceptable, we'd be willing to kind of work with Ms. DeBruca to get the information you need. Cool. But that's one of the examples she provided to us.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
As I understand, I'm guessing that the list is voluminous.
It'll be in the range of about 1,400 agreements, if you want the total list. And they range anywhere from $200 to $300 to $100 million. I mean, it's quite a range of agreements.
Another follow-up?
Please.
And are some of them ongoing so that different services can fit under master contracts, or are these 1,400 discrete contracts? And I only want the consultant contracts. I'm looking at Mr. Cummins in the back of the room. I don't want to know the contracts that you've negotiated for Connect. I mean,
sure.
I have a pretty good idea with those. These are consultant contracts specifically.
So, Chair Gumberg and Chair Johnson, it's kind of a wide range. We have some umbrella agreements or price agreements that we utilize. We also use price agreements that DAS has negotiated. And then we have individual contracts for individual types of services. So it's really a range of the types of agreements with consultants.
And one more, just to give you a flavor for where I'm headed. During the time that I was at ODOT, and that was arguably a million years ago, I noticed the regularity with which there were change orders to contracts. Mm-hmm. As the head of Central Services, do you have any kind of a policy or philosophy about change orders? And how amenable ODOT is or is not to doing change orders?
So, Chair Gumberg and Chair Johnson, the process is really the program requests a change order through the Office of Procurement, and then our procurement professionals work with the program folks or staff to decide whether a change order is appropriate or if it's even legal or whether or not it can even be done. But we rely quite a bit on the program staff as to what the need is for the change order, and then we just provide consultation on the appropriateness and the legality of the change order.
Thank you.
Yes.
Other questions? I think we're good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
I think, Mr. Chairman, with that, what I'd like to do now.
I didn't know we were done. You're not going to get away that easy.
I didn't expect. I was surprised that I was, Senator Johnson.
One more.
Sure.
The question that I have is across the ODOT enterprise, that central service charges seem to have been going up. If you could provide the committee with some detail about why and about they seem to have gone up all across ODOT. And one of the things that happened with DAS, Department of Administrative Services, is that they were raising their assessments to small agencies, sometimes in the area of 65% to 85%. And their argument was, we just don't want freeloaders to be in the system anymore. We got to charge everybody. So if there's any rationale for why the cost curve out of central assessment has been going up, I would appreciate knowing that. I think the whole committee would.
Sure. Chair Gumberg, Chair Johnson would be happy to provide you with our analysis. You know, it also, some of that is a function of changes we've made in the way we budget for some of our charges. For instance, we've started to centralize some of the state government service charges and move them from program budgets into the central services budget. So it's really kind of a combination of that. And so we are paying for a lot of the central charges we get out of DAS, out of my budget.
I think this is going to be one of the things that I hope Mr. Naughton takes on in his new role at the Department of Administrative Services, and that's figuring out how these assessments work. The assessments seem so much behind the curtain, and they just are going up exponentially. And in some cases, we're shifting general fund back and forth. So I'm quite concerned about the escalation in these assessments, agency assessments.
Mr. Chair, if I might, Tamara Brickman from the Department of Administrative Services within the Chief Financial Office. And I believe next Wednesday, you are going to get just an entire day's worth presentation on state government service charges. And Mr. Naughton,
God, I can hardly wait.
I know. It will be enthralling. Anything Mr. Naughton does is enthralling. I'm saying that in case he's watching. But they are looking at and have provided some very specific examples of agencies and where the charges have gone up and explanations as to why. And I also provided, and I don't know if Ms. Nabrka has had a chance to show you yet, just with respect to ODOT over the last three biennia, what the state government service charges have been. And they've remained fairly consistent for ODOT over the last three biennia with respect to the cost to the agency from the state government service charge.
Follow up. Right, that's a slightly different question. I'm trying to drill down on how much ODOT Central Assessment is charging the individual constituencies mm-hmm. of ODOT and why those appear to have gone up. So you've right. got the global agency charges that ODOT is assessing, and then to find out, and I'm sure that part of it is DAS charging agencies more, ergo agencies are looking to their constituent units to charge them more. At least that's my supposition, and I'm eager to have facts to bear that out or not.
So, Chair Gomberg and Chair Johnson, we will provide you with that information and provide it for the committee. We'll send it to Ms. Nabrka for the entire committee.
Thank you.
All right. Are we done? All right. Mr. Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, what I'd like to do now is ask Chris Cummings. Mr. Cummings is the program manager for the Connect Oregon program. We are blessed to have his skill set and his professionalism, and he will walk you through the governor's recommended budget brings forth $58.6 million specific to Connect Oregon 6. We will speak to that. That's our opening salvo. But then there's a construct. There's also in a policy committee, House Bill 2464. That is, for all intents and purposes, a framework. Some of the numbers are blank in the discussion. But again, recall that we, if we are fortunate enough to animate this program, this will be the sixth cycle that we engage. And then I think we will identify some issues that have been broached as the evolution of the project has and the program have played themselves out. There are some issues that have been called into question, and I think those are part of a discussion that we can have here, we can have in the policy committee, or we can have in maybe another forum here as we continue to evolve, certainly with my hope of animating what I think has been a very successful and productive investment known as the Connect Oregon program.
I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair and praise Mr. Cummings in front of his boss and colleagues. He handled the last round of Connect 5 with, I think, incredible grace and diplomacy. It was not always a smooth path. I followed the progression all the way through the local advisory committees, all the way up through the final selection, both the penultimate and the ultimate final selection committees. And Mr. Cummins had to answer very quickly some complicated questions, do a lot of complicated math as the charts were shifting and changing. And he and his staff, I thought, carried that off with incredible professionalism.
So the bar has been raised, my friends.
Thank you very much, Chair Johnson. Apparently, the director's going to have to buy me a bigger hat now, but I do appreciate that very much. For the record, my name is Chris Cummings, and I'm the Freight Program Manager for ODOT. We're going to, as you know, discuss Connect Oregon today. Some of the things that we'll go through, and we'll go through quickly, is program description, a little bit of history about the program, the selection process that we at ODOT go through to pick the projects that we do pick, and issues that we heard, as Director Garrett had mentioned, we heard different issues during the last round of Connect Oregon, so I'd just like to point out those issues so you're aware of them. Connect Oregon is a multimodal grant and loan program for specific modes of aviation, marine, rail, transit, and bicycle and pedestrian. Bicycle and pedestrian as a mode was added to Connect Oregon in the last legislative session in the fifth round of Connect Oregon. Connect Oregon grant is actually lottery bond backed, so funds come from lottery bonds, the sale of lottery bonds. Applicants to Connect Oregon are required to match at least 20% of the cost of projects. And in addition to that, as we award grants for Connect Oregon and loans, 10% of the total pot has to go to each of five ODOT regions. So 50% of the program funds need to go to each of the five regions. Connect Oregon regions nearly mirror ODOT regions. So you'll see that the regions break up into region 5, 3, 4, 2, and 1 as ODOT regions break up. Since the first legislation, since the 2005 legislature approved Connect Oregon, there's been five programs of Connect Oregon for $382 million. The first three programs of Connect Oregon were $100 million each. The last program before this last one was $40 million, and the last program was $42 million. Of that $382 million, ODOT's awarded 240 project applications, grants, and those projects have leveraged about $600 million. So our total program investment into those non-highway infrastructure projects is nearing $1 billion. As I mentioned, I would have liked to mention this earlier, but as I mentioned about non-highway projects, I do want to point out to you all that projects that are specifically eligible for highway motor fuel tax are not eligible for Connect Oregon funds. So roadways, sidewalks, in some cases rail crossings. Even more telling than the amount of funds and projects that were awarded to Connect Oregon are the projects and requests that weren't awarded to Connect Oregon. We've had over double the amount of projects requested that went unfunded. So roughly 280 projects went unfunded with Connect Oregon funds. The request of all those projects was $600 million. So 2-to-1 non-funded. As Chair Garrett mentioned also, the governor's budget request has $58.6 million in it for Connect Oregon, for Connect Oregon 6. How do we pick all those projects? ODOT has a very robust, transparent, bottoms-up, grassroots sort of process for selecting the projects. Projects are submitted by local applicants, both public and private. We go through a review process with expert modal staff on projects, marine staff from Business Oregon, aviation staff from Department of Aviation, rail and transit staff from their ODOT, and bike ped staff as well from ODOT. Once the staff reviews and they provide a score for the applications based on how well they met five legislative considerations. The five legislative considerations in the last round of ODOT, which have remained relatively constant for the first five rounds generally, are whether a project improves transportation costs for businesses and provides access to jobs, whether a project provides an economic benefit to the state, whether a project improves utilization and efficiency for Oregon's state transportation system, whether the applicant has a larger percentage of match than that basic 20% required, and also whether a project is ready for construction. And we'll touch base on that readiness for construction in a bit. When ODOT requests applications and reviews applications, everything is based around those five considerations. And I want to be clear that they're considerations as given to us for use, not criteria. Sometimes projects will meet four considerations, sometimes they'll meet five, and so on. After ODOT staff has reviewed the applications and given them a score, if you will, the applications all go on to expert committees. We have modal committees that will review aviation applications. The Oregon Department of Oregon Board of Aviation will review those, and likewise with the other modes. There's statewide modal committees that review them. Then, once they're reviewed by modal committees, applications go on to regional committees, which are comprised of all the acts within the state. Again, it's for the five regions. The acts within those ODOT regions get together and make recommendations for projects and prioritize projects per their region. Once the regions review the projects, we have a final review committee that's made up of all the that's made up of select members from all the other previous 11 committees. Finally, what happens is the final review committee will make a recommendation back to the Oregon Transportation Commission for funding project selection. Prior to the Oregon Transportation Commission making project selection, we have a public hearing. And then a month later or at their next meeting, we'll have a selection of those projects. All the committees that are involved in this are open to the public. The public's invited to all of them. In all, we have over 200 stakeholders that review the applications. They don't all review each application. They may review just aviation applications and applications within their region. But generally, we have 200-plus stakeholders that review the applications against those five considerations. We just finished up a round of Connect Oregon, which some of you I know you're aware of. We awarded $43 million in projects. We had realized some savings from past projects that came in under budget, so we were able to go over to $42 million and award $43 million. From that last round, we realized we heard some policy questions about Connect Oregon and how it's designed. Some of the questions were based on statute, and some of them were based on programmatic dealings that ODOT runs internally with through rules or program policy. The statutory issues that we heard were whether or not bike ped as a mode should be included in Connect Oregon, whether or not there should be more preference to loans as opposed to grants in Connect Oregon, the types of projects selected for funding. The definition of transportation project under Connect Oregon is very broad, and there was some discussion this year whether rolling stock and planning projects should be allowed to be funded under Connect Oregon. And regional equity, is the 10% the right number to have for the regions? Should it be a different number? That came up as well. Some of the programmatic issues were, what was the definition of readiness? How do we explain that? How do people see readiness? Timelines of project selection, I know that came up with the Aviation Department recently, is we award, or the OTC, I should say, awards funds in August, and projects are generally, contracts are generally ready by October for the applicants, or I should say recipients. Does that timeline work well for everybody, or should it be moved? And then equity amongst grantees. We've heard a bit about some of our grantees receive more money than others. I know that there's been a request for some of our top 10 funding source recipients, and some of the larger recipients receive more than the others. So those are questions that have come up for Connect Oregon with this last round. Every round we do get different questions, and we always try to improve upon it where we can, particularly if it's a programmatic area that we can address. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, colleagues. Any questions of Mr. Cummins? Okay. I guess I have one, and that would be, I know that there's a bill with some framework in it, but I think we do have to do some work collectively in refining some of the criteria. Now in the sixth iteration, I think some of us watched the regional equity situation with alarm, and so I'm hopeful that if we're able to pursue a transportation package, that can, we can work that out. And I don't know what forum you anticipate the negotiations taking place. Maybe you don't have an opinion, but
I think if I may, I don't think we have an opinion. Madam Chair, I think that's probably between you and your colleagues, because as Chris indicated, I think the significant issues we need to deal with are on the policy side. We at the department and with my commission, I think we can deal with some of those programmatic, those administrative side type issues here and ensure that we are as effective and efficient in those areas to make sure we remove any friction that may exist. But there are some statutory, some and I think some significant policy conversations that need to transpire amongst you and your colleagues.
And for the benefit of Representative Nierman, who for whom this program may be new, some of the debate that we've taken up is the character of the commodities that are carried. I personally think that's very dangerous. If we start making qualitative decisions about what the commodities are, that could spill over into deciding about highways, what trucks are allowed, what products are allowed. We do like onions. We don't like oil. I mean, whatever it is. Getting into that commodity discussion helped fuel some of the debate around Connect 5. And my personal opinion is that's a dangerous slope. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree with you, and I would just amplify that statement by saying I think the same arguments you made about commodities apply to modes in the sense that the whole system needs to work very well.
I would agree.
Madam Chair, just a comment. I'm just going to continue the agreement cycle here. Again, from an agency perspective, I think it's extremely important that we act in accordance with the laws, the rules, and the project, the program, the well-established program protocols we have. And as we veer outside of that, then I believe we run the risk of making decisions based on personal beliefs or political philosophies. And I don't think that's the role of an agency.
Thank you, Switzerland. I mean, Mr. Garrett. Okay, colleagues, any other questions of Mr. Garrett, Mr. Cummins? Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think that can... we have an opportunity for invited testimony. Has anybody felt the spirit of testimony moving? We don't have any public, so I think we have handled that issue. Colleagues, any concluding comments or remarks or thoughts? Ms. Naburka, you want to give us some guidance for tomorrow? Or no, tomorrow's Friday. You want to give us some guidance for Monday?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, tomorrow's Friday, and on Monday, ODOT will be back for 2 days, Monday and Wednesday, when you'll get a chance to talk more about the DMV service transformation project and additional questions about passenger rail.
Thank you. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you. With that, we're adjourned.